Please call this meeting to order. Any minutes you want to improve? Not till tomorrow, okay? This committee was kind of dealt a raw deal, in my opinion. And we have to live with it, I guess. But there are a lot of changes that I didn't foresee, but we're having. So we'll go through those changes now, and if members have questions, we'll probably keep them until after we get through the whole bill. That's acceptable? We'll start out in the first page for the business and community development. The first change item is Riverbend Center for Entrepreneurial Facilitation. And that's a deal out of Mankato. And that got funding for $35,000 for the biennium. The second change item is in line 7. It's small business development. And that got increased $200,000. Minnesota Inventors Congress got $100,000 for the biennium. Then you go down to line 10. La Creche Early Childhood Center from the base, $15,000. And then on line 16, Minnesota, what is that? Petrol Tank Release Cleanup Program Extension is $12,400,000. That's really a change that involves, you'll see that made up later. It basically cancels it. Cancels, right?
It does.
Yeah.
Works out well.
Other change item is Petrotech Relief Cleanup Program Extension.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I don't want to interrupt. You told us not to interrupt, but...
Anybody interrupts has to start over where I ended.
Keep your finger right where it was. Are you only doing the pluses and not the minuses? A little advice to the chair is maybe you want to mix them up to kind of dull the pain a little bit. Yeah, I noticed you skipped over a few of the...
Okay.
So you're not...
A lot of those are government...
Just change items and not... Okay, just checking.
Just change items that are different.
All right.
Thanks. I'm sure we'll have to hit some minuses later.
Yeah.
Okay, Petrol Tank Release Cleanup Program Extension is $300,000. Then, Methane and Workforce Partnership, we go down to the total agency total, and it's House compared to the governor, $335,406 and 7 and $300,000 for 08 and 9. Then on page 2, you got a lot of petrol tank cleanup stuff that all balances out, so it's got zero effect on the budget. Is that correct? So if you have any questions, we got some wonderful people from Commerce to answer those questions. Again, Petroclean program extension in 08-09 is $2,168,000. And the extension of the sunset date that goes out to 2011-12 is $30,352,000. Then we got administrative services for the unclaimed property division. This is for another person for the biennium. Unclaimed property is doing a lot of extra business right now, and they need some more help, so we provided one extra provision. That's $130,000 for the biennium. And market assurance, service contract, house file 1003, service contracts and contract provision regulated is $220,000. in 06, 07, and 220,000 in 08, 09. And the totals for that section, market assurance section, is the same, 220 for 06, 07, 220,000 for 08, 09. Renewable energy incentive payments, a minus 600,000 for 06, 07, a minus 600,000 for 08, 09. Renewable energy incentive payments reallocation, 600,000 for 06, 07, 600,000 for 08, 09. And, funded with petroleum inspection fee, that's 824,000 for 06, 07, 824,000 for 08, 09. And, weights and measures, another petroleum related item. This is counteracting the money we got mentioned earlier. We got funded with petroleum inspection fee $5,014,000 for 06, 07, a negative $5,014,000 for 08, 09. And where are we at here? Then, under Minnesota Housing Finance, Consolidated Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program, we're adding $6,500,000. For a total, agency total of $6,500,000 in 06 or 07. Explore Minnesota.
Sure.
Yeah.
Doesn't parentheses mean you're taking it away?
Yes, it does. Which one are you talking about?
Second column from the right is housing parity governor.
It doesn't have brackets. The governor suggested $13 million cut. And we're bringing half of that back. Support Minnesota Tourism, base funding from the governor, $2 million in 06, 07, $2 million in 08, 09. Mississippi River Parkway Commission Tourism promotion from the base is $50,000 in 06, 07. Okay. Bureau of Mediation Services. Seems like every time we have one of these, we do this. From Labor Management Co-op grants, we're taking $200,000 each year. And then we go to Historical Society. Budget reduction. We're adding from their budget reduction, we're giving them back $150,000. And sesquicentennial celebration. $50,000 for 06, 07, $50,000 for 08, 09. School capital tours, we're canceling the cost for the biennium for school capital tours. We decided that that was a thing to do a couple years ago, but we didn't get that done. Reopen historic sites, $1,486,000. Program total, $1,806,000 for 06, 07, $1,806,000 for 0809. And we go down to the bottom of page 4. We have petrol tank release cleanup program extension. We have $20,922,000. We get down to auctioneer article 3 on page 232. On page 5 we have a direct technical base. In 08-09 we add $15,079,000. Then we got direct from base TANF. We lose that amount. We lose subsidized housing for $18,398,000. Then we got activity daily totals for that same amount. Okay. So that's a 200, they're taking 200 from subsidized MPEP subsidized housing allowance, and that's $17,767,000 in 06-07 and $18,398,000 in 08-09. So we have a total of that below that. And then in MPEP child care assistance grants, there is absent day limitation. In 06-07, we take away $859,000. 08-09, we take away $1,360,000. TANF refinancing. $46,950,000 in 06-07. So you got, then you got below that, you got the activity direct subtotals. And absent in BSF child care assistance grants on line 260. We get $650,000 from it goes to the general fund. That's a wonderful place. $650,000 06-07. $993,000 in 08-09. Total carry forward adjustment for CCDF is $18,339,000. Carry forward expenditure offset is the same thing. And then page 6, we have NDE transfer accounting solution activity daily subtotal of 06-07, $18,989,000. For fiscal year 08-09, we have $993,000. And group residential housing grants. This is a team challenge solution. Is $1,798,000 for group residential housing in 06-07 and $1,098,000 in 08-09. Pardon me?
Yeah.
you're planning your amendments? Is that what you're saying? In other childhood and economic assurance assistance grants, on line 295, transitional housing TANF refinancing, $2,294,000. Supportive housing pilot TANF refinancing, $1,500,000. Transitional housing TANF refinancing, $2,794,000. And supportive housing pilot TANF refinancing is $1,500,000. And then you see your activity total below that. Then we go over to...
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Maybe a quick question for staff.
Okay.
Why is it that the lines on 295 and 297 are different numbers?
Why don't you ask that after we're done?
You bet. Thanks.
On page 7, Department of Human Services total direct appropriations, a negative $68,794,000 for 06-07 and $14,524,000 for 08-09. And then you got TANF for 06-07, $33,477,000. You take that away in 06-07. You take that away in 08-09. Then we talk about the options after that. From total option A totals, articles 1 and 3. And it gives you the effect of those options. And unclaimed property on page 8. Unclaimed property, securities, sales retention, change from the governor, we gained $2 million. Canceled contaminated account balance of $1,302,000. Residential propane program account transfer, $350,000. Cancel transfer real estate fair housing education program. $750,000. 21st Century Mineral Fund transfer, $1,040,000. That's an interest accrued. Mortgage consumer education account transfer, $200,000. Cancel transfer mortgage flipping education account, $15,000. In House File 103, service contracts and contract provisions regulated is $226,006.07, $226,008.09. Petroleum inspection fee deposited in special revenue account, negative $5,838,000 in 06-07, the same in 08-09. And then we go to MDE transfer account solutions account transfer in 06-07, $3,209,000. Special revenue account transfer, from Article 3, is $1,139,000. Food stamp employee employment and training and federal reimbursement in 06-07 is $3,600,000, 08-09, $4,800,000. Child care license fee reduction on line 387 is $434,000 in 06-07, $434,000 in or 809. Then we go into non-general fund revenue, residential propane program account transfer of $350,000, and 21st Century Mineral Fund interest transfer of $1,040,000. Cancel and transfer real estate fair housing education program, $750,000. Mortgage consumer education account transfer of $200,000. And cancel and transfer mortgage flipping education account of $15,000. Petrotank release program cleanup extension of in 809 of $65,842,000. Petroleum inspection fee deposited in special revenue account of $5,838,607, the same in 0809. MD transfer account solutions account is $3,209,000. And the net totals. Then we have option B on page 9. So if anybody has any questions of staff, feel free to ask them.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just the when we're looking at the refinancing,
page what? Line what?
I'm sorry, page 6, and we're looking at 295 and 297. Sorry, the refinancing. Why the how we gain the numbers don't match up? Could you maybe explain
that? What you gain is you take money. And correct me if I'm wrong. You take money out of the TANF funds, or out of the general fund budget for that item, and you replace it with TANF funds.
We picked up
some more money from TANF to replace that money.
Thanks.
So we're just replacing the money that way. Is that kind of correct, Mr. Okay, any other questions? Representative Sertich.
Hey, Mr. Chair, not a question for staff, question for you. There's probably some language in this bill as well. Could we go through any of the language changes in the bill at some point?
Certainly. You got language not covered by the. You getting specific things? You want me to go through the.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't have the other sheet in front of me, and I probably won't get one. So there's no real opportunity for me to know where the changes are.
I'll let you use mine. We have house research that tells you some of the changes. And I can go through that section by section for you,
okay,
if you'd like. In fact, I think I'll have staff do that. You think you can do that, Megan? Since you wrote it?
The House research?
Just want the nonpartisan research
to
go first.
Nonpartisan research go first, fine. I think people are sick of listening to me.
So, Mr. Chair, do you just want me to start going through Article 2?
Is that what you'd request?
Section?
Sure.
Okay. Section 1 of Article 2 updates the definition for ethanol development to change the industry specification with which it must comply.
What page is that?
Give us pages as you go.
Sorry. Page 9. I'm looking at the bill summary on page 9.
Okay.
So on the bill, this starts at Article 2, page, which is page 13, line 23. On the bill, it's Article 2, which is page 13, starting at line 22. And in the bill summary, which I'm going to be going through, it's page 9 of the bill summary that I'm starting on. Section 1 updates the industry specification with which ethanol must comply. Section 2 establishes licensing fees that would be paid to the Commissioner of Commerce for initial course approval, $10 for each hour or part of an hour of education for each education course approval sought. $10 per course for renewal of course approval, $100 for initial coordinator approval, and $10 for renewal of coordinator approval, and provides for the expiration of each form of approval after 24 months. Section 3 sets a $1,500 fee for domestic and foreign companies filing an initial certification of authority to be admitted to transact business in Minnesota. Section 4 sets licensing fees for insurance producers, which would be paid to the Commissioner of Commerce. Most of the fees are set at $50, except for $200 for an initial or renewal business entity license. Section 5 reduces to $50 from $80 the fee for each initial and adjuster license and temporary permit and for renewals or amendments to those licenses or permits. Section 6 sets a flat fee of $150 for each initial individual real estate appraiser's license. Section 7 authorizes the Petroleum Tank Release Compensation Board to use expedited rulemaking procedures in the Administrative Procedures Act to adopt rules for competitive bidding requirements for consultant services. Section 8 authorizes reimbursements for certain bulk plant work that was completed after November 1st, 2003 under certain conditions. Current law allows reimbursement for the bulk plant work for upgrades completed between June 1st, 1998 and November 1st, 2003. So there would be an extension under certain conditions. Section 9 extends the sunset on the Petroleum Tank Release Cleanup Act from June 30th, 2007 to June 30th, 2012. Section 10 requires $10,900,000 to be annually allocated from the Renewable Development Account to fund renewable energy production incentives until January 1st, 2018, and more than doubles the amount that must be used each year for incentives for electricity generated up to 200 megawatts by eligible wind energy conversion systems. Section 11 makes appropriations to the Contaminated Site Cleanup and Development Grant Account for 4 years. Available for 4 years, notwithstanding other statutory requirements for unused appropriations. Section 12 strikes language in the law referring to Minnesota redevelopment account, or in the law regarding Minnesota redevelopment accounts, referring to Greater Minnesota. Section 13 modifies some definitions in the redevelopment account statutes. And Section 14 sets requirements for redevelopment grant applications, requiring that municipalities must approve an application by resolution and set forth the content, certain content requirements for those applications. Section 15 modifies requirements for redevelopment grants, and specifies how the commissioner should prioritize different grant applications and award the grants. And requires municipalities to pay for at least one half of the redevelopment costs as a local match in order to qualify for a redevelopment grant. Section 16 creates an exception to the rule that fees for materials and services must generally be deposited in the general fund and allows the commissioner of deed to sell marketing materials at cost to certain organizations and place the funds received from sales in a revolving account. This money would be appropriated to the commissioner to pay for production of such materials. Section 17 allows a community or tribal government to retain 20% of a Minnesota Investment Fund grant, capped at $100,000, when it's repaid to the community or tribal government by the person or entity to which it was loaned. Section 18 modifies the requirements for qualified job training programs to qualify for job training program grants through deed, and basically modifies the length of courses that would have to be included to be approved, and the income requirements for individuals served by the program. Section 19 strikes language requiring the chair of the Governor's Workforce Development Council to serve on the Job Skills Partnership Board. Section 20 modifies statutory language directing the use of workforce development funds and permits the Job Skills Partnership Board after March 1st of any fiscal year to use those funds for various programs established in the statutes, including a new program established in a couple sections, the Incumbent Worker Training Services Program. And it sets forth a variety of conditions that must be met for workforce development funds to be used for these programs. Section 21 modifies the definition of displaced homemaker so that individuals receiving support from public assistance on account of dependence in the home may be considered displaced homemakers, provided that they no longer receive cash assistance under MFIP. Section 22 establishes a new program of special incumbent worker training grants, which is intended to expand opportunities for businesses and workers in Minnesota to gain new skills, and it would allow employers to basically train workers who already work for them. And it sets various requirements for the use of the funds and performance outcome measures. Section 23 provides that all money in the Workforce Development Fund that is not otherwise appropriated or transferred is appropriated to the board for a state dislocated worker program, as outlined above. Section 24, as a subdivision requiring the Commissioner of Labor and Industry to issue annual permits to a boat carrying passengers for hire on inland waters if it's passed inspection. Section 25 sets a fee. The next several sections actually set fees for licenses, which are spelled out in Section 31, which I'll get to for a moment. Section 27 deals with the inspection and registration of boilers and pressure vessels. And authorizes the assessment of penalties for boilers or vessels that aren't inspected as required. Sets fees for inspections and requires the Division of Boiler Inspection to issue registration certificates listing boilers and pressure valves at a location. Section 28 requires the commissioner or its designee, rather than the Division of Boiler Inspection, to examine all masters of boats and vessels carrying passengers for hire on inland waters and sets licensing fees. Section 29 requires the submission of license applications at least 15 days before a requested examination date. Section 30 requires applicants for engineer's licenses to pass an examination approved by the Commissioner of Labor and Industry. Section 31 changes a variety of inspection fees, most of which are currently set by the Commissioner of Labor and Industry. And you can see the various fees listed there. $200 for operating permits for vessels on inland waters, $50 for a master's license, $55 for annual inspection of boilers, and so forth. And it sets an $80 rate per hour rate for inspections that don't have fees set elsewhere in the statutes as well. Section 32, this deals with giving insurance companies time after the inspection of boilers and vessels to file copies of the inspection with the chief boiler inspector if an insurance company has conducted the inspection, and establishes various requirements or modifies various requirements for notice of insurance coverage and discontinuation of coverage, and set penalties for the Commissioner of Labor and Industry to assess insurers for violations of these provisions. Section 33 makes incentive payments from the Renewable Energy Production Incentive Program contingent upon the Commissioner of Commerce having received an application, and annually appropriates to the Commissioner from the Renewable Development Account sum sufficient to make required incentives payments. Section 34 limits the renewable energy production incentive to no more than 200 megawatts. It's currently at 100 megawatts of nameplate capacity for the electricity generated by the qualified wind energy conversion facilities. Section 35 requires the Commerce Department to authorize payments of the renewable energy production incentive to wind energy conversion systems for 200 megawatts of nameplate capacity. Section 36 modifies the Director of Weights and Measures duties with regard to metrological services and support to U.S. businesses and individuals wishing to market products and services outside the U.S. By updating quality assurance standards and changing the source of certification that needs to be sought for a metrology laboratory. Section 37 modifies the definition of automotive fuel. Section 38 modifies the definition of ethanol blender. Section 39 empowers the Director of Weights and Measures to issue citations to people violating provisions of Chapter 239, which deals with weights and measures, or rules adopted under that chapter. Section 40 modifies the distribution of fee revenue from the petroleum inspection fee and appropriates 81 cents of each dollar of inspection fee to the Commissioner of Commerce for operation of the Weights and Measures Division, Petroleum Supply Monitoring, and the Oil Burner Retrofit Program. And the remainder is deposited in the general fund. Section 41 modifies the requirements for petroleum products inspections. Section 42 changes some references in the statutes for assessments of product quality. Section 43 updates the industry specifications with which a variety of petroleum products must comply. Section 44 requires the provision of bills of lading or shipping manifest to persons receiving fuel upon the sale or transfer of diesel fuel. Section 45 deals with the sale of certain petroleum products on a gross volume basis and sets requirements for biodiesel and strikes language referring to oxygenate that is to be blended into gasoline. Section 46 replaces a reference in the requirements for minimum ethanol content in gasoline or engine fuels. Section 47 replaces the reference to oxygenate blenders. Section 48 deletes disclosure requirements for the sale or transfer of non-oxygenated gasoline before October 1st, 1997. Section 49 is some clarifying language. Section 50 strikes the current disclosure and dispenser requirements for automotive fuel rating certification and posting, and instead requires compliance with a series of listed federal regulations. Section 51 would permit the dissemination of unemployment insurance data to local and state welfare agencies for the purpose of collecting debt generated by overpayment in an assistance program. Sections 52 through 63 update industry specifications with which a variety of products must apply. And you can see they're all sort of related to gasoline and fuel, and it just updates the industry specifications for those. Section 64 specifies that the contractor's recovery fund can be used to reimburse the Commerce Department for legal and administrative expenses incurred in administering the fund. Section 65 deletes language requiring the State Board of Investment to pre-approve a method selected by the Commissioner of Commerce for selling abandoned securities. Section 66 changes the requirements for how long the Commissioner of Commerce must hold securities presumed to be abandoned, and provides that certain property can be sold without notice after it's held for 1 year. Section 67 deletes the definition of commissioner. Section 68 clarifies that a capital improvement plan and annual amendments to it aren't effective until they're approved by a county board, but deletes procedures for approval by deed. Section 69 allows the Minnesota Housing Finance Authority to refinance the debt of rental property owners under certain circumstances. Section 70 makes American Indian tribes and tribal housing authorities eligible to receive challenge grants. Section 71 lowers the marriage license fee from $85 to $75. Section 72 deletes the requirement that $10 of the fee collected for every marriage license be appropriated for the Displaced Homemaker Program. Section 73 requires the Commissioner of Deed to develop an initiative to promote employment opportunities in Minnesota for minorities, and for the initiative to significantly expand job training available to minorities and promote wage increases. It would require an interim report and a final report by January 2006. Section 74 would require the Commissioner of Deed to investigate options for charging fees for services to help companies seek federal assistance with respect to small business innovation research grants, and requires that the study be submitted to the legislature by February 2006. Section 75 establishes a sesquicentennial commission to plan activities relating to Minnesota's 150th anniversary of statehood. Section 76 is a revisor instruction to renumber some things, and Section 77 repeals several provisions such as current fees for Commerce Department approval of courses, statutory provisions establishing criteria for redevelopment accounts, the authorization of agreements between Deed and other organizations for tourism purposes, language requiring the Job Skills Partnership Board to submit workforce development recommendations to the legislature every 2 years, some definitions that are made obsolete by other statutory changes, and a statutory section addressing mortgage certificate credit aid. I could turn it over to Ms. Lemire.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 3 is the Human Services Appropriation, which we already went through on the spreadsheet. On the House Research Bill summary, starting on page 25, is Article 4, which is Department of Human Services forecast adjustments for fiscal year 2005. And then Article 5 begins the language portions of the human services programs that are included in the bill. Section 1 of Article 5 continues the child care provider reimbursement rate freeze through June 30th of 2007. It also provides for an adjustment to the child care centers.
Mr. Chair, sorry for interrupting. We skipped a whole article. I know you said those were in the appropriations, Article 3, the human services appropriations, but that's in our summaries, that's about four pages of things. There must be some language in there as well, or is it straight appropriations? I mean, we're wondering if we are missing anything by skipping that, reviewing that entire article, Article 3?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Slavik, I think Article 3 is just the appropriations and rider language that goes along with those appropriations.
We went over those earlier.
Okay. All of it? Okay. Thank you.
On page 25 of the House Research Bill Summary, Section 1 of Article 5 also makes an adjustment for the child care centers that were negatively impacted by the regional rates that occurred a couple of years ago. And then beginning in fiscal year 2008, it sets out a process for establishing maximum provider rates each year. Article 2 on page 20, or section 2 on page 26 of the summary limits absent days for families that are using child care assistance. Section 3 reduces child care center licensing fees by 25%. Section 4 extends the sunset date for the American Indian Advisory Council. Section 5 extends the sunset date for alcohol and other drug abuse advisory councils.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 6 is the American Indian Child Welfare Project section. This adds authority for the Commissioner of Human Services to provide grants to Indian tribes so that they can provide child welfare services that were formerly provided by the county child welfare agencies. It allows the commissioner to seek federal funds to carry out the project and to use any other funds available to operate the projects. It lists the criteria that the tribes must meet before they can be eligible for the grants, provides that county social service agencies are relieved of responsibility for responding to abuse and neglect allegations for tribes who have received grants under this program, and it instructs the tribes that they must provide information to the state that meet federal and state requirements.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 7 requires the commissioner to prepare an annual report on the number of applicants for specified programs that have not lived in Minnesota for the 12 months prior to the application month and specifies additional information that must be included in the report. Section 8 removes language requiring child care, child support collections to be deposited in the child support collection account in the special revenue fund and now requires those funds to be deposited into the general fund. Section 9 extends the committee termination date from June 30, 2005 to June 30, 2008 for the state traumatic brain injury program. Section 10 modifies residency requirements for the general assistance program. Section 11 removes the requirement that the commissioner adopt rules related to providing special assistance to general assistance recipients in processing a recipient's claim for maintenance benefits from another source. It gives the commissioner the authority to provide methods by which counties shall identify, refer, and assist recipients who may be eligible for benefits under federal programs for the disabled. And it prohibits the total amount of interim assistance recoveries retained from exceeding 35% of the interim assistance recoveries in the prior fiscal year. Section 12 removes obsolete language and makes technical changes. Section 13 increases the supplemental rate for the Teen Challenge program. Section 14 includes the diversionary work program within the MFIP residency requirement. Section 15 specifies the standard at which the diversionary work program assistance will be paid to an eligible family unit in which all members have resided in the state for fewer than 90 consecutive days. Section 16 increases the amount of rental subsidies counted as unearned income for the MFIP program from $50 to $200. Section 17 adds a requirement that job counselors explain to MFIP participants the probationary employment periods new employees may serve after being hired. And any assistance with job retention services that may be available. Section 18 modifies quarterly comparison reports related to MFIP. Section 19 specifies the way in which the amount of assistance will be calculated for eligible DWP family units in which all members have resided in Minnesota for fewer than 90 days. Section 20 provides that the 90-day residency requirement for full benefits under the DWP program is not affected by a subsequent absence from Minnesota for fewer than 30 consecutive days. Section 21 provides that the 90-day residency requirement for full benefits under the DWP program does not apply if the family unit includes an ineligible mandatory family unit member who has resided in Minnesota for 90 consecutive days immediately before the unit's date of application. Section 22 establishes the Long-Term Homeless Supportive Services Fund. This is created to provide integrated services needed to stabilize specified persons living in supportive housing. Section 23 extends a sunset date for the American Indian Child Welfare Advisory Council, and Section 24 repeals laws related to child care provider reimbursement rate freeze. Statutes related to special revenue account for child care and interim assistance advocacy incentive program, and rules related to referral to other maintenance benefit programs and special services for SSI applicants.
Could you repeat all of that for us?
Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank staff for that as well. That was extremely helpful, and it's going to save, I think, committee a lot of time of having to read through this ourselves and try to find where you did what you did, and I really appreciate that. Mr. Chair, then I have a question, actually just going right off of that. This bill is going to be voted on. Tomorrow we're taking testimony from real people. Yep. Thursday we offer amendments, and you hopefully pass your bill out of here.
That's a good point.
It'll be on the floor sometime next week, is my guess.
I'm not sure. They haven't given me the date that it's going to be on the floor yet. It has to go to Ways and Means in between there.
That's right. They put Ways and Means and then on the floor sometime next week, ballpark.
I would assume so.
Okay. So then my question goes to then page 30 we have, and I can't remember if it's option A or B anymore. I don't care. Do we think Rossino, I mean, I've only been elected for 5 years, been on the Capitol for 10. Do we generally draft up bills with this funny language that if some other special bill passes, then now we get to do these other neat things? I mean, it's very silly, number one, I think, and no offense to anybody on the table. It's just very silly. And secondly, how do you match this up in conference committee to the Senate?
The total bill is going to be a trick anyway, not counting what you just mentioned.
I'm sorry?
The total bill matching this up with the Senate is going to be a chore to begin with. It requires two conference committees. But with the extra twist that you put on it, the Rossino provision, that adds another dimension to it also. And I think we are planning that if the Rossino provision or casino provisions come in, it will give us different totals. What we're doing is we're saying, if it doesn't, we also have this plan in place.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's just seeing another dimension.
I'm not suffering from any delusions that we're going to have the Senate approve gambling. However, the House has passed Rossino twice.
But, Mr. Chair, it hasn't this year yet. I mean,
I totally agree.
This is like the fifth dimension or the twilight zone of, it just seems like a silly way to handle policy. We should be responsible. If we're going to vote Rossino, we vote Rossino, and then we take care of these bills. If not, it's a waste of time and paper. I mean, I like when we use paper because that helps the timber industry up north, but other than that, this is just silly.
You might bring that have that feeling, and I certainly recognize the fact that some of us can dream if it passes that we get 15 million more. But we've dreamed before in this committee, and it's kind of where it is. I wouldn't say that, but I really am trying not to say nice, nasty things or things, bad things about anyone. So I'm working very hard at that. I'm biting my tongue sometimes. But it's a very good point. We do have a contingency if a casino does pass, that we have that provision in here. If it doesn't, we don't exercise that provision. It's as simple as it is. And yet, Representative Clark.
A couple quick questions. If I read this correctly, this bill maintains the elimination of the three youth employment training programs totally, right?
I can't.
Can't hear me?
No.
Okay, sorry. And so this bill, as I'm reading it, maintains the governor's recommendation for eliminating the three youth employment training programs. There's no money in there for them at all. Or did I miss it somewhere?
Right now, there is no provision there. In there's one training program that for youth that I hope to reinstate.
Mr. Chairman, it isn't even included if we pass this bill.
I think all three of them got a federal increase. However, I do hope that we can they just got a six. It says in the back of the sheet that the youth programs did get a 16% increase in federal funding. However, out of the workforce development funds, we hope to carve some money out for one job training program. We're working very hard at that.
Mr. Chairman, why don't you ask your staff to report on which of those federal funds require state matches? That would be very helpful information.
I think you just asked that. They will get that back to you.
Because it means nothing to have federal funding if they have require a state or local match.
Very good point.
And then the other thing is, I'm just trying to, on the one page we repeal the child care rate freeze, but then we reinstate it. Is that correct? I mean, I'm just trying to find that. It's reinstated.
Where are you at?
Well, I'm trying to remember where I thought it was. Okay, Article 5, Section 1.
Article 5, Section 1.
I guess page 80 of the bill. I just want to make sure. I'd love to be misunderstanding that. I'm just not sure if I know what it says. It's just confusing to say in one place that it's repealed and then here it says it's continued, so I'm trying to...
I believe this is just the way the governor did it, and that's why it's reflected in the bill. Daniela,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, this just follows what was done in the governor's bill. The law that created the child care rate freeze is repealed, but then the rate freeze is replaced in the statutory section that deals with reimbursement rates.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure, is that reflected in the summary here for the public? Maybe it is. And
Section 5.
It is? Okay.
Representative Sala.
Mr. Chair, along those lines, if I'm looking at Article 5, Section 1, right?
Thank you.
Is that a, and I apologize for missing the fiscal part, but that's a $30 million cut for child care in, $22 million in 06, $30 million in 07, and $31 in 08. Am I reading that right?
What page are you on?
Page 5 of the spreadsheet where it says... option A, Article 3, freeze maximum child care rates. That's as a result of keeping the freeze on, right, those numbers there?
It's just keeping the freeze on, yes.
Okay. And it's proposing, Mr. Chair, keeping the freeze on then through you have your numbers out through 08, 09?
That's what
is that
the,
correct?
That's what the law says, yes.
Mr. Chair, the way that it's written now, the freeze expires on June 30th, 2007.
Wonderful.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Salk.
Do the numbers reflect that? You always want to call you Ms. Pugnelli because of past experience. Ms. Lemire, do the numbers reflect that? They don't seem to.
Mr. Chair, Representative Salk, members, the way the governor's budget was put together, and this is reflective of the governor's budget, the freeze would continue until 07, and then in 07, the numbers that are in effect at that time, plus CPI, would go into effect. In other words, they would be adjusted by consumer price increase or a like inflationary measure.
Mr. Chair, so in 08 and 09, it does go down. That's where you go down to $3 million and $1 million. So that's mostly the CPI adjustment.
Mr. Soderbergh.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Slavic members, that reflects in part the thaw, partial thaw. I don't know what to call it, but it's not the complete freeze.
Thaw with a freeze. Now, that's interesting. Very Minnesota, too. Thank you.
Representative Westenberg.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say thank you. You know, I understand Representative Sturgis's concerns about 1644, but I think it's really, you know, thinking outside the box and being creative and trying to, you know, find a way to make things work for everybody, and it's just an opportunity to, you know, approach this from a different angle. And so I just want to, you know, I certainly understand the planning concerns is how do you plan on something you don't know. But I still think it's smart for us to take, you know, a look at the possibilities.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Sheriff. So, Westberg, we can use all the, you know, nice talk of outside the box and planning ahead, but I still think it's irresponsible budgeting. This gambling plan is going to court, no matter what. We should all just live in reality, and that's not inside or outside the box. That's just the real world. Any gambling plan that passes, one way or another, some group's going to take it to court. If they take it to court, we're not going to realize any money because of licensing fees that tribes or private individuals have not agreed to pay yet, and that's where the realized benefit for the state comes in. And if this goes to court, it's just going to put a hole in this budget, and I think we're being irresponsible with state tax dollars to dedicate it anywhere in a mythical way in this bill or even in a real way in our budgeting. And I just think it does us a disservice. And that might be more philosophical than anything, but I just want to be using real numbers. I mean, kind of like Jerry Maguire, show me the money. We're going to spend the money that we have. We're going to appropriate it, and we can't use any mythical money around here.
Representative Westenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sturgis, I certainly appreciate that concern, too. But, you know, past history is, I think, the precedent that we'd want to, you know, work from. Mm-hmm. And this particular situation has come up in at least six different states. And, you know, the legislation has been successful each time. So I think that there's, you know, great reason to believe that we will be extremely successful in accomplishing what we're trying to do.
Representative Sturgis.
Las Vegas.
Representative Wilkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sturgis, I think this is much more the responsible way to do it. We don't have it built in that's absolutely part of the budget. It's an option. And if we go where 70-80% of the public want us to go and pass for Sino, we'll have that money to fund a few extra things that we would like to fund in the budget. And I'm not a huge betting man, but maybe you'd want to take a bet on how the court case comes out, because Representative Westenberg's right. It's the gambling is won every time in court in those six states. So it will be a losing court battle from everything that I've read.
Representative Sturgis, to that point.
To that point, Mr. Chair, Representative Wilkin, it doesn't matter if it wins or loses. We're not going to have the money for however long the court case goes on. number one. And number two, I'm looking forward to a green vote on minimum wage, since your rationale of 70 or 80% want it. I've seen the same numbers for minimum wage, so you're going to have that change of heart on the floor. This is going to be a great day. Another Sertich Wilkin polls off. 70 to 80%. That's good rationale. I hope you remember it on the minimum wage vote on the floor. You have a chance to change your ways and to see the light.
Maybe we compare the two up and we'll pass.
Representative Mahoney. Mr. Chair, I along as the line that Representative Sertich brought.
I was sure you're going to say we're not going to have any gambling in this committee there for a while.
I think we gamble every day with those lads, Mr. Chair. My bigger concern with a budget that puts this kind of an option out there is what the Wall Street bankers are going to think when we go to sell our bonds. And when we do funny accounting, they seem to raise the rates on our bonds, and it costs the state more money. So even if all the court cases go through this line and everything else, I think it's an all-around losing proposition for us. I will say this about this budget, Mr. Chair, and I'm saddened by what we're doing here, because I think we're really making some unconscionable decisions here. I know, having served with you for several years now on this committee, how it pains you to put a budget like this forward. The governor did a disservice to the state with his budget, but I think the chair of Ways and Means did a disservice to you and to the state with what your numbers are here. I don't pretend to understand your budget entirely after an hour going over it. I will spend the next few hours, the next day, reading this budget so that when we come back and have testimony from the public, I'm able to ask responsible questions and hopefully get some responsible answers out of the fiscal staff and yourself, and let's bring to light some of the issues here that the public is going to dramatically be affected by this particular budget. So this is a tough budget, and I don't envy that seat that you're sitting in right now trying to defend this, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Clark.
Well, I have a couple questions. First of all, Representative Wilkin, I just wanted to ask you what the source of your 70 to 80% of support for Las Vegas at Racino has left. I haven't seen that poll. Can you give me a source?
Representative Wilkin.
Mr. Chairman, I just, in the papers that I've seen, it's not Las Vegas-style casino. It's Racino. And Racino enjoys strong support. Representative Westberg could probably give more citations because he's on that gambling committee.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, before we start throwing those around, since it appears in our budget, I'd really like some documentation of this widespread support for this kind of gambling. You want to call it Las Vegas or not Las Vegas, whatever. It's in our bill, so I just want to know what kind of documentation you have for that kind of public support.
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Park, the Star and Tribune has run polls on gaming and gambling here in the state of Minnesota, and they have come up with that figure, and the governor's office has been using 70% too. So I'm sure that I can get you documentation on those figures.
That would be interesting, Mr. Chair. And I guess I agree with Representative Mahoney. I think this is a very sad day to see this budget in front of us. Mr. Chairman, you know, I did offer a bill last week, and so I have some feelings about offering a way to solve some of these problems, and this whole committee voted on last week when we had the opportunity to think about how to have some corporate welfare, which I say with full meaning, subsidies to corporations. It's not a bad word. It only becomes bad if you think people on individual welfare are bad people, I guess. But if we think that all corporations and individuals get welfare, get public assistance, we had an opportunity to put some money on the table in this committee. $100 million a year for that. And that one, no one questioned whether or not it was applicable to this committee. So I want to know what the reason, for example, is for quadrupling. I want to know what the rationale, the reason is, Mr. Chairman, for quadrupling the subtraction from people on MFIP if they happen to have the opportunity to live in subsidized housing.
What is the rationale for that? Why are we quadrupling the subtraction from their, you know, $432 or $537 a month?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we taking, you know, in some cases almost half of their input? Right. Why would we do that? What's the rationale?
One of the things that we were stuck with our $72 million target, negative target, was raising some money for certain things. Many people believe that the MFEP renter's credit is already being made up with a renter's credit from the state, the 30% figure. And to have cash to pay that, some people think is double dipping. And I think I got that information from Representative Bradley. And
well, Mr. Chairman,
that's why they came up with that figure. We were kind of like Ways and Means a little bit. Ways and Means decided they wanted to give education and ECFE some money, $130-some million. Once they decided that, along with Representative Bradley's committee, to give him extra money, they had to get it from somewhere. And unfortunately, we were that somewhere. One of that somewhere. Other committees got it too.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's making public policy, and we can bemoan what our committee got as compared to other committees. And I know that you are a fighter for this committee. However, you didn't win with your caucus, and so the Republicans do want to quadruple the amount that you would take from a poor family. What I wonder is, what happened? I know we never finished hearing the testimony from the folks who spent, I think, one of our first sessions here. We talked about the wage gap. We talked about what it takes for a family to live on whatever income they have, whether it's earned income, whether it's an additional subsidies they might get. And we had a calculator right up here on the screen that showed us what it costs, and nobody questioned the veracity of that, and that was considered reasonable. It helped us understand what individuals and counties throughout a whole state deal with when they have either low wages or public assistance or a combination of the two as they try to become more self-supporting. So I found it really unbelievable that you know, we would go after those folks who showed us how extremely difficult it is to live on that. What do we want them to do? You know, the one thing I was thinking yesterday, one of the things I might start telling my constituents, based on what we passed in the ordinance yesterday, if they want their child care assistance, their housing, their health care, their nutrition, anything else to be paid for, they should be pregnant and claim that they might want to have an abortion. And that way, there's $several million available to help them, because this committee is not going to help them unless they just can't figure it out. These are real people. These are not, you know, just fantasy population numbers. These are real human beings who are struggling. It's extremely hard to see, you know, to explain any justification for some of these cuts. And I'm just extremely frustrated. Let me just ask this last question again, Mr. Chairman. When people come to testify, how much time are we allotting the committee for the kind of testimony that we're going to need to hear from the public?
Depending on how many people want to testify, it'll be approximately...
Excuse me, I wasn't clear. How long is the committee hearing for this public testimony?
We have tomorrow morning and all evening.
We have tomorrow morning and then all evening, tomorrow night.
Okay.
And I'd also like to mention that amendments, balanced amendments, are due to be in to Kitty Musty's desk tomorrow by noon, if possible. If possible, they have to be in by noon so we can get those scheduled also. Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just going back to this gambling language, you being the chair, and then just moving this bill forward with that language in there referencing Racino in that House file, does that make the Racino proposal a germane amendment to this bill?
I never thought about it.
Good question.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I hope not.
Well, Mr. Chair, you're the chair. You guys, as Sam Groffler did to Representative Clark last week, get to decide that. So
if the question comes up, I assure you I will.
You will decide that?
I will decide that.
Well, Mr. Chair, the question just came up. I asked the question. and Mr. Yes. Chair, I'll leave you a note. You have a few days on this. You don't need to answer me today, but tomorrow hopefully you can answer that question. And hopefully before noon, because some people might want to get their amendments ready before noon and include that.
I'll give you an answer now. I hadn't thought about that particular scenario, but I am going to keep my options open. Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chair, I'm still trying to figure out some of the numbers, and I'm still trying to figure out what happened to the $18 million surplus and the basic sliding fee and the $32 million TANF fund. I don't know who should I ask about where that went.
Danielle, do you know?
No.
Mr. Soderberg or Danielle?
Everybody's pointing a finger here.
I know. I think I mentioned that. Education got $130-some million, and I just happen to know that ECFE programs got $18 million. Is that where our child care money went? I'm not sure.
Well, Mr. Chair,
I do know one thing, that child care funding was not cut. It just did not get the thing that perhaps you and I were looking forward to, and that's taking care of some of the inherent problems. We did take care of two problems, the out-state cuts that were made for 24 counties, and we did take care of licensing reductions. Other than that, child care funding was not cut. It just was not increased like perhaps you and I wanted it to be.
Mr. Chair, though, there was a memo that there was $18 million surplus.
$10 million, I knew, and then They were creative enough to figure out there was in, and that was from a surplus from calendar year 2004, and the $7.5 million was from a surplus prior to that. Why the question that came to me is, why did we have these surpluses? Well, I found out traditionally we do get a surplus from Minnesota, and I would suspect that it had something to do with 2003 when they cut the eligibility. I would assume that would have something to do with it.
Mr. Chair, that is what we understand, is when they cut eligibility, not as many families could apply. Therefore, that created the surplus. But the
previous to that, we did also have surpluses.
In some of the, particularly I know in some of the out-state areas, there was that, and we did meet with the Department of Human Services. My question here, though, is as a legislature, as legislators that make fiscal decisions that have a surplus in a fund that's not showing up on the bottom line, do we take our surplus funds and then just put them in other funds? Is that what you're saying? So we took the child care money and we just diverted it to the general fund? Or we put it in the ECFE? Or I'm just trying to connect the dots, Mr. Chair.
The dots are connected just exactly what you said. And I'm not...
Mr. Chair, is that legal?
Is it legal? I think it is. So is it unfortunate? I think it is. Some powers to be decided that other committees were going to get an increase, and in order for that to happen, they took money from us. And I like you, think the needs that we have in this committee are just as critical as ECFE or education is. But they decided education needs a three and a three. So I can't go back and get the money from them. However, I can try to make the most of what we have. And you have the right to put amendments to change what I did.
Mr. Chair, it's like taking money that you overspent at home on, for groceries, or that you have in a refund, and then going out and spending it on entertainment, or switching your funds around. And it seems that this legislature didn't do things like that in the past, where we had funds in a certain area, we tried to keep the money to a certain area, and it seems that child care has certainly taken its share of hits and is taking it again with the freeze, and to take this kind of a surplus and divert it. I know you're telling me you didn't have a choice, but it certainly, in my opinion, goes into sort of these ethical dilemmas along with legislative dilemmas in terms of how we're spending our money, maybe in terms of Racino. And I just have a second question for you, Mr. Chair.
I like you, I'm not a lawyer.
Mr. Chair, well, these are very serious questions, and I also think, along with Racino, if the money isn't there, I mean, shouldn't there be a plan C for some other form of revenue that we could just put in there? That would solve the problem.
That would be fantasy world number two?
Mr. Chair, cigarette tax, you know, that would solve the problem. You have the money.
Mr. Chairman,
you have a bill, I know.
To that point, that bill was voted down in my committee, and it did not receive one DFL vote. So I still anxiously await the DFL plan on the budget.
Mr. Chairman.
I know in the health committee, the DFL plan on the budget was not to find alternative savings, but to increase spending by about $300 million. So I think the corporate loophole thing has been taken care of in that committee by the DFL alternative on the health budget, and I look forward to the alternative plans here.
Representative Slough, can you finish?
For now, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Sirdic.
To that point, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wilkin, very interesting. Number one, they may be investing $300 million, but they're keeping working Minnesotans insured at the same time. But to your other point, are you saying that bill to raise taxes that you authored, and let me repeat that again, I know you're sitting down, and thankfully almost everybody else is sitting down, Representative Wilkin, your bill to raise taxes that didn't receive a vote? No, they both had the bill. He just raised taxes less than Representative Bradley. I don't know about you guys on that side of the island wanting to raise taxes, but was that bill revenue neutral? Because you're seeming to say no Democrats supported it. Was that a revenue neutral bill, or were you getting new money, as Representative's line of questioning went to? Because I know you wanted to raise taxes, Representative Wilkin. You wanted it revenue neutral, right? You're a good conservative.
Representative Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sturge, you're correct. It was revenue neutral, but it was the cigarette tax that was available, and at least according to the lobbyists, they thought they had that thing passed. They thought they had the majority on your side of the aisle in that committee, and didn't receive nary a vote or any kind of support. It's an alternative to have on the table to lower health care costs, which I think, you know, a fairly substantial majority of the public wanted. And it kind of gave me a feel for where things stood on the cigarette tax and whether it was being used in a revenue-neutral way to lower other taxes or putting more money on the table. As far as I'm concerned, the cigarette tax is dead for the year.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sir.
I just didn't want to get you to imply that potentially there was some new revenue available that was passed up. And there have been plenty of bills that have died around here this year that I think will be resurrected again. And I'm guessing that may be one of them. And I know certain members in that committee, and we're going a little far afield from discussions of jobs and economic development. This bill is, I believe, far afield from discussing jobs and economic development. But I have a funny feeling that cigarette tax went down on folks from my side of the island. I won't speak for everybody, but that it was because of how it was dedicated. There was no new money available, and I just want to make sure that you don't get away with a good turn of a word to say that you have this masterful solution. And I don't want you to get in trouble for proposing something and maybe implying to the public that you were trying to raise taxes. Representative Wilkin, you would not do that. Yours was revenue neutral. I've been looking out for you.
I appreciate that. We never know what Representative Krinke is going to do with the money he raises in this committee. So,
although he is accountable, he's running for Congress. Representative Slough.
Mr. Chair, I'm still just trying to understand the other pot of money. I don't quite understand what happened to it is the TANF money. You know, TANF is federal money that we were awarded for our welfare to work programs, and I wondered if I could just ask a question, maybe Mr. Soderberg, what happened? Where did that $32 million go, or how does it, is it redistributed in here or somewhere?
Mr. Soderberg.
Mr. Chairman and members, if you look at page 5 of the spreadsheet, I'm going to get my ruler out so I make sure I get the right numbers. And you look at line 250. This is under MFIB Child Care Assistance Grants. You will see that there is a tenant refinancing of $46,950,000. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that includes the $33
million. Mr. Chair.
Representative Spock.
Mr. Soderberg, can you explain what a TANF refinancing is?
Mr. Chairman, for lack of a better term, or TANF refinancing, or a better way to explain it is it's just what it does is that it's replacing what was previously a general fund appropriation with a TANF appropriation. And it, meaning less general fund money is needed to do the same thing, TANF money offsets that money.
Mr.
Chair.
So it's kind of taking the TANF appropriation and putting into child care and taking the child care money and put it in the general fund? Did I get that right?
Mr. Chairman, that's what it would be. Yeah. The general fund appropriation in this bill is lessened by that amount of money, yes.
Mr. Chair, and I'm sure that probably meets the federal requirements, right, Mr. Soderberg, because you're actually spending it, but you're just sort of displacing. It's like putting water in or oil and it moves it, or jello, and it would move it over to this other place, right? Something like that?
Representative Flower, I can speak to the requirements as I understand them. As long as the money is spent on individuals, services to individuals who are TANF eligible, it meets the federal requirements. I really can't speak to whether it's appropriate or not.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Mr. Soderberg, what happens with the next year when the money's not there to fill that money back in?
Mr. Chairman, if you look at the same page of the spreadsheet, you'll see line 232, which is the MFIP grants, and you will notice that there is an increase in the general fund appropriation there, and that's to help backfill that. The general fund is being increased in the out years because the TANF money is no longer there.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Slough.
Isn't that what we call tails? Mr. Chair, I thought we were trying not to have tails. Isn't that what we were told, we couldn't do anything with tails?
It's my understanding that the Chairman of Ways and Means can do a lot of things that we can't, are told not to do.
But this is our job.
Pardon me?
Mr. Chairman, this is our bill. This isn't the Chairman Ways and Means bill. This is our bill.
I agree.
So
we can carry tails.
Oh, okay. So we can carry tails. That's a change.
We have to control as much as we can, and that the ability to do that has always been there.
So, Mr. Chair, the targets don't include tails, obviously. There's no tails target.
There has been, and then... I'm not so sure if we have one now. You don't?
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I was looking for some of the bills that came through here in recent weeks providing subsidies to and tax breaks to different organizations, different businesses. And I'm not seeing them in here. I guess some of them were going on their own. Is that right? Are they all going on their own?
I can't hear you.
Sorry. I think some of the bills that went through here in recent weeks that were subsidies to businesses or tax breaks for businesses.
Example.
I'm just trying to think of whether there were several biotech...
Bioscience bills, Representative Mahoney had a bill that is not included right now for $250,000. Bioscience, $50 million is for bioscience funding for
program expansion.
Program expansions in the higher ed committee, and in the House, in the Senate, it's in our committee, Economic Development Committee. I don't know why someone made that decision. I thought it would be in this committee, but it isn't. But the $15 million is in the higher ed committee because of its relationship to the University of Minnesota.
There are a number of other bills I went through here that had tax breaks or tax subsidies for businesses and corporations. And I presume they're going on their own, I guess, right? Is that
if they had tax implications, they went to tax
and
they will go on their own. They are not in this bill.
Maybe I could ask Mr. Seidberg for a tally, if you wouldn't mind, of since we're dealing with the subsidies to both individuals and businesses such as they have it here, if we could get a tally of the subsidies to businesses that are either in this bill or that have gone through this committee, I just think it would be helpful because it's hard to track that, and I think it's very substantial. We talked about $10 million here, $10 million there. You know, it was a lot of different bills that went through here and what have economic development implications. So just be helpful as we're trying to judge what was option A, which seems like we're going to be stuck what we're cutting. And be helpful to know kind of a context for that, Mr. Chairman. So I don't know if I could have to do that. I appreciate that.
Was that a question for him?
It is. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sloan.
Mr. Chair, along in that same spirit, could we do a separate analysis of the tails? Representative Honey mentioned the bonding houses and looking at our financial structure and our structure in the out years, and those tails do affect how the bonding houses look at us. So could I get an analysis of what kind of tails? It's hard for me to tell where the tails are versus where the regular spending. Is that a fair request, Mr. Chair, Mr. Soderberg? Thank you.
Mr. Soderberg, can you get that for?
Mm-hmm.
He's writing it down. Any other questions? Seeing none, I would move House File 1976, this is the year my daughter was born, by the way. I should remember that one. You too? I knew there was something I liked about it. Many things. All in favor of that? Any discussion about that motion?
Mr. Chair.
We're moving the bill.
Okay, then we're not voting on it then.
No, we're just moving the
okay. You almost did an all in favor there, so I got a little worried.
We'll move it, then we have to amend it with a delete element. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Both same sign.
Aye.
Okay, now to the delete all amendment, which is DE4. We've been discussing it all through this 2 hour period. So, all in favor of...
Wait a minute, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I think you just
want to
move it.
You don't need us to vote on the...
Okay, just move it. We just move it.
And then...
Okay, I'll move it.
Lay it on the table.
Lay it on the table.
We don't want to vote on it.
I thought we'd shortcut the whole thing.
Vote on the amendment to the bill.
We vote from the
other. Yeah, we're just adding the DE4 amendment to get it in the shape the author wants to discuss, and then all amendments will be to that.
Sure.
So I think adopting the DE4 amendment is in order.
Sure.
And then you can prepare amendments, if you have any, to that amendment.
Sure.
So we'll adopt the DE4 amendment, and then we'll lay it on the table, okay? All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
So all motion passes. Please have all your amendments be drafted to the DE4 amendment, please. And like I say, we'll look forward to public testimony tomorrow, and we'll look forward to your amendments by noon tomorrow.
No,
thank you very much. We're adjourned.